It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. Good to have you here. You know, I was thinking about this, and I'm going to be talking about it all week. This is my theme of the week, and that is, what happens when you or I or anybody else put in poor effort, right? If we put in poor work or poor effort, a lot of us believe that we're going to get poor results. And I say that is not true. If you put in poor effort, you're going to get no results. You're going to get no rewards. How's that? You're probably going to get fired. All right. You're going to get fired from your marriage or from your children's lives or from your job. Okay. So poor, it doesn't, give you poor results. It gives you no results or really, really bad results. Right. So if you do a really good job, or if you do a good job, then you get slightly less than good results in general, right? It's just the way life seems to work. If you start really performing excellent and you're just putting in tons of effort, then you see a lot of good happening, right? Think about that. It's not a tit for tat. It's not equal. It's not fair. People always talk about what's right and what's fair. Well, look, this is all right. Looks like we had a little technical glitch, and we have our first guest drop off. He's back on, but also it looks like my mic went dead. But anyway, now it's been restored. So let's get this party started. Norm Blumenthal, he's one of our regular contributors. Besides being a regular contributor here, he is attorney for workers and consumers. He is selected as one of the top attorneys in Southern California.
All right, Bert, we're here to make our listeners some money, and I heard your little bit about poor effort and bad results. I'd like to look at it on the positive side of it, and my motto is, if you bang your head against the wall long enough, hard enough, money will come out.
Yeah.
So that's my motto, and so you got to get up every day and work as hard as you can, because all the working stiffs of America, we got an uphill battle here. And as attorney for workers all over the country, I have a show today and a show right before the election with you. And my job is to convince you that you'd have to be felony stupid to vote for Donald Trump. And I'm going to do that by explaining to you how to follow the money. That's all you have to do. It's not about anything else except about following the money and vote your pocketbook. It's the economy, stupid, as we talk about. So a couple things, as your attorney out there, I want to put you in touch with. One is, here's your choice. Do you want to increase the minimum wage? And as we talked about, a rising tide floats all ships, which means everybody's wages is going to increase. Do you want to increase the earned income tax credit, which is increase the cap so that more people will pay in the middle, will pay less taxes? Do you want to increase the floor before losing your overtime payments from $23,000 to $47,000? You want to increase the tax on the top 0.1%, making more than $5 million a year, and create a minimum tax for those making over $1 million a year? Well, then the choice is clear. You vote for Democrats. You vote for Hillary Clinton in the White House, and you try to get a majority in the House and the Senate, And that way, all of these laws will come to pass. You will make more money. If you don't, you have nobody but yourself to blame because you're going to end up on the other side of the spectrum. Donald has told you he wants to increase the tax deductions for the upper one-tenth of 1%, including himself. That's what he wants to do. This is the guy that made $695 million last year and supposedly paid no taxes. He has a tax loss carry forward of over $1 billion. How do you do that? You do it by stiffing everybody else. That's why they call us working stiffs. It's because we do the work and then get stiffed. That's what happens. And so that's because you got the people with the money making the laws and deciding who gets the deductions and who pays the taxes. So it's a pretty easy equation when you just think about the money. And that's what I want everybody out there to do. How did Donald Trump, everybody has to be asking themselves now, how did Donald Trump get almost $1 billion in tax deductions? He did it because he took all of his companies into bankruptcy. I like to call bankruptcy the last bastion for thieves and scoundrels. And what it does, it bankrupts the debtor, it gives the creditor the asset, and the non-debtors who are on the hook for the debt, they get released and pick up the deductions. That's exactly what Donald did when he went under. I mean, it takes a lot of effort to lose $1 billion, a lot of work, and he did it. And so he thinks it's smart. It may be smart for him to pick up the deduction, but he lost a fortune on it. He almost went bankrupt personally himself, and he stiffed everybody else out there. He stiffed the banks. He stiffed his workers. He stiffed his contractors. Everybody out there that gets up every day, goes to work for a living, to try to make a living for himself and his family, he stiffed. That's what he is, and he just doesn't have the temperament to be there.
Well, you know what, and there's a couple of videos out there. People have not seen these videos. These videos are not backed by a PAC group that I'm aware of, and I could be wrong. I haven't looked at all the background on all of them, but I know a couple of them out there were put together by individuals who have worked with Donald Trump, and they tell you how he was to work with directly, and so it's not just you saying that. There are literally hundreds of people who have experienced working with him directly, with Mr. Trump directly, only to be screwed. That's it. And I want to also point this out because I know that you're aware of this. In fact, that I believe your office sent this over to me. And this is something that you're talking about when you say follow the money. So last year, and you correct me, maybe it was earlier this year, there was a bill that was introduced from the Department of Labor regarding these new overtime rules. Well, the House of Representatives, which is primary, voted 246 to 177 Wednesday to delay this new rule by another 6 months.
Yeah, and it's not.
So I want you to talk about this because this is exactly what you're talking about when you say follow the money or vote with your pocketbook. And I want you to talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, and this is really important. It was the Department of Labor. The National Labor Relations Board. They passed a regulation because they're controlled by the Democrats. And what it did is if you have a floor, which was $23,000, if you made more than $23,000 a year, they could call you an executive or an administrator in a fast food or in a big box store or in a small box store, and they make you a manager or an assistant manager, and you work 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week, and you never make more than that $23,000 because you never exceed the floor. So that floor has been in place for many, many years, and they said, well, we have to make – this is crazy. So they took the floor up to $47,476, and they made it effective December 1st. Now, in the hopes of getting a Republican president, the House passed a bill that let's extend that to December And then there, December 1, let's extend it to 6 months, which would be after the new president came in, so that they could turn around and change the bill by getting other people into office and have the department, the National Labor Relations Board, change the bill, put it, keep it at $23,000. So all you working stiffs in the hopes of getting a overtime pay, you're never going to see it. You're never going to see it if you put Donald Trump into office. You're never going to see it. And so at the end of the day, this is money for lunch. You know, Bert sits here, you know, and brings this show to you, trying to explain to the working stiffs out there how to put more money in your pocket. And I'm here as an attorney for workers in California, and I'm telling you, it's across the country. The only way that you're going to put more money in your pocket is to elect Democrats, and principally to elect a Democratic president to protect you from just these kind of bills that the legislature will dream up, who are all bought and paid for by management. This is an adversary system, Bert, as we talked about. The Republican Party represents management. Their job is to have laborers make as little as possible and to make their profits as high as possible and to put people in office that will pass those bills. And that's what it is. I mean, that's what their job is. There's nothing wrong with that. But the realization that the Democratic Party, on the other hand, is the party of workers. The Democratic Party's job is to turn it around, to tax the people that are making over $1 million a year, $5 million a year. So you can't walk away from making $695 million in a year and pay no taxes. That's the point. There has to be a minimum tax that you have to pay to support the system that allowed you to earn the money that you've earned. And it's just that simple, creating some fairness in the system where the people in the middle who are doing the work, the people that are out there working as hard as they can to have a better life for themselves and their children, get a fair shake. They can't be paying half their money into taxes and then try to live on the other half when they're earning minimum wage at $7.25 an hour. This is just not a fair system. And everybody out there should understand the only way we're going to change the system is having politicians in office that support democratic ideas of making the system better for ourselves and our children. And that includes at college, public schools. Like Hillary Clinton says, the idea of if you make less than $125,000 a year, your kids can go to a public school without payment of tuition. That doesn't mean it's free. You still have to pay for books and room and board, but at least the government's not taking any more money from you for the ability to attend the school. There's plenty of empty seats in every classroom. The fact that you can attend without paying tuition is not a great shake. And so that's what she's trying to do. And for persons that have student loans, to allow them to refinance them at lower rates, and for allow them to be amortized with principal first and then interest, which will cut off the payments by 40%, for keeping the cost of those loans for no more than 10% of your earned income. And then if you make every payment for 20 years, let them write off the rest because you've done all you can. But the idea that you can't bankrupt your student loan and you can't refinance your student loan, these are all laws put into effect by lobbyists for the student loan industry, where these folks are making 10-12% on these loans. And that it's just that simple. It's an adversary system. I don't begrudge the people of America that are making these kinds of profits. What I do is I have to get the word out that we can change it. Because this is a system where the actually people can vote. Kaepernick
Absolutely.
Can take one knee in the national anthem, and he's not beheaded. You
right.
know, this is the kind of thing. This is a free society. Your power is in your vote.
And well, and what I like about this demonstrates so clearly what you're talking about. That and this is great political stratagem here. There's, you know, as you said, this is the way the system works. There's nothing wrong with it. So in this case, we have some Republicans who have been able to delay this law going into effect. And this is, as you said, this is because they hope that we're going to get a Republican president. And if the Republican president steps in, then this law, this overtime law, may go away. Well, for a lot of working class stiff, that would hurt them. And this is a perfectly clear example why getting out there and voting makes a difference. You should vote locally. You should vote nationally. Voting makes a difference. And as you're pointing out, this is what makes our society different. It's what makes America great, that you can vote and that you can disagree publicly without being beheaded, that you can stand up for what you believe in and ultimately make a difference.
This is the chance. This is the one chance every 2 to 4 years where the working stiffs have a voice. And to throw away your voice to vote for management, you have to be felony stupid. You just have to be felony stupid, because at the end of the day, you're voting against yourself. You're voting against your family. You're voting against your children. And if you want to make a better America, you got to vote for politicians that are at least telling you that they're on your side. I mean, to vote for a politician that says he's going to increase the tax deductions for the 0.1%, and you're going to end up paying more, and he's going to put the country deeper into debt, and if he doesn't like it, he'll do what he did with his business. He'll bankrupt this country. This is felony stupid, and this guy just doesn't have the temperament to have his fingers anywhere near the nuclear codes at any time. We've all seen the shows on 60 Minutes. There's nobody that could stop him if he were president from launching. There is no one. The president has – it's the one thing in this country that's so scary. The president has absolute authority to put our nuclear arsenal to work, the triad system, and it could destroy the world. So
absolutely.
That's the thing. You have to lose sleep over that one.
Well, bottom line is, I think that you have to look at some of the things that Mr. Trump has said that is, not representative of the American way of life. And I like what you're saying there, Norm, that, he is blatantly telling you what to expect from him. And there's an adage that says, when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. Don't try to second guess them. When people are telling you who they are and what they're going to do, you need to take them at face value, because it usually doesn't get better. We always, typically in a polite society, we always put in pretenses, and we always try to behave and be on our best behavior when we're first getting to know somebody. In a case when somebody on their first date or on their first meeting is telling you how they're going to behave and how they're going to act, you need to take face value of that and get away from them. In this case, Norm, we're out of time, but it's always good to have you on the show. If you guys are having some questions about what's going on in your job, you can reach out to Norm and his team, and he'll point you in the right direction. It's bamlawca.com, bam, bamlawca.com. If you're in California, he can absolutely help you. If you're outside of California, his team will tell you where to go. Norm Blumenthal, I want to thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thanks, Bert. Look, take care.
You bet. Good stuff there from Norm Blumenthal. And one of my favorite things about Norm is that he tells you how it is, right? No holding him back. He coined that phrase, felony stupid. And ever since I've met Norm, every now and then when I do something that is stupid, I hear him saying, not only is that stupid, hey, that's felony stupid. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. We're having some technical issues today. We're having some delays and some little outages here and there, so just bear with us. One of the perks, if you will, of doing a live show. Whatever could go wrong, may go wrong, possibly will go wrong, but that's all right. My next guest, Wesley Wood. Wesley Wood is the founder, president, and CEO of Wood Financial Group, a local independent financial services company located in Hendersonville, Tennessee. A graduate of the University of Mississippi, Wesley received a bachelor's degree in business administration. He holds multiple series in multiple states. Wesley Wood, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bird. How you doing today?
Doing great, man. Good to have you on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I love the felony stupid. I'm going to remember that one.
Absolutely. And speaking of felony stupid, you know, we as an American people have somewhat, you know, not to be too offensive, but we have become felony stupid when it comes to our savings.
Yep.
We are saving less and spending more. And I want to talk about this. So my first question to you is, when it comes to having, let's say, a simple emergency savings plan, how many people have some kind of emergency savings?
Yeah, I mean, it is a problem because this is just the basic foundation of if something kind of goes wrong, you've got enough money just sitting in the sideline to pay for it. And unfortunately, the amount of people that do not have it is 28% of U.S. adults have no emergency savings, absolutely zero. And of that 28%, most of them don't even have a bank account. So you're talking about 66 million of the 235 million adults do not have any money sitting on the sidelines just in case something goes wrong, like a car has a transmission issue or you get a doctor bill that comes in. They have nothing there that's awaiting for them to have that money to do so.
That's amazing. So 28%, 30%, possibly more.
Right.
Have no savings whatsoever. And what shocked me just now is that you're saying a large percentage of this 28% don't even have a bank account.
Correct. Correct. Don't even have a bank account. Just take their paycheck if they get one to the bank and get cash and spend it. And I tell you, in my area too, which is not a poor area, but we're seeing many more places pop up just around our vicinity, the cash advance places. And I think that even those places are booming and doing very, very well because people are living not only paycheck to paycheck, but now getting to the point where they're actually leveraging their next paycheck in order to get some money to come in just to cover their expenses for that next week. So I think it's even worse than what these numbers actually say. And so then the question is that I would have is like, well, what if somebody does have a car that's broken down? What do they do? Like, what's their options there? And looking at statistically, it looked like about 23% of the people that have any kind of issues that they've got to pay for that are a little bit unexpected, 23% of them will just cut back in some other areas in order to be able to pay for that. But the other almost 77% or so, half of those folks have got to borrow from friends and family. The other half may put it on credit cards or just simply won't be able to pay that expense whatsoever. So it just, you know, continues to add more debt and more problems and more issues for them as a family.
Sure. Yeah, and that's why I'm glad you brought that up, because that's why you've seen this almost epidemic rise of these title loan places and these
payday advance
loans.
Right.
Yeah, and what people have to understand that depending on where you live, it doesn't matter. These are all usurious loans, but depending on where you live, it could be as much as 50% per month.
Mm-hmm.
Per month.
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking 500-600% a year.
Yeah, it is definitely felony stupid for sure. And I think really kind of what the problem is that people just get into a habit and get into this spiral, And it just becomes like just a way of life. It's like, well, there's no other option, so this is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to. And in order for people, I think, that are kind of in this boat to get better and to not be such a problem, it has to almost be just a change in the way you live, a lifestyle change. You know, it's a lot of times when people are, you know, and I'm not saying it's across the board by this 28%, but I would say of the 66 million, a large percentage may fall into this category of almost like fad dieting, if you will. So if somebody struggles with just being overweight their entire life, you know, you can do some quick fixes. You can do the cleansing methods to where, you know, you only drink water for a week. And, yeah, maybe a short-term fix, you may be able to put a little bit of money away. But eventually what happens when you kind of get off of that, most folks just gain all the weight back, spend all the money down, end up having zero in their bank account. So it really has to be a lifestyle change for folks to kind of get out of this just cyclical rut to cure this problem.
Yes, and you know what? Let me tell you, I remember when I was young and dumb and of that mindset that you're talking about, I never had any extra money. You know, and what's so funny, you get addicted to this kind of lifestyle. You go through college and you're not, you know, when you're young and you're barely making money, you kind of get used to not having money. You kind of get used to spending all your money and being, you know, whatever, living on a very tight budget. The challenge is that no matter what your budget is, this is what finally made a difference for me, that no matter how your budget is, you need to put some money aside for savings. Now, what turned me on to this is I had a friend of mine who, him and I had the same banker, and the banker accidentally let it slip that this friend of mine would sometimes make a deposit of 25 cents into his savings account. And that's laughable. And when he first told me this, I just thought, well, that's kind of useless. You know, that's 25 cents. I got 25 cents in my jar, right? I mean, nothing. But it's the mindset. It's the habit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ability to tell yourself, no matter how much money I don't have, I'm still going to put aside some for savings.
Mm-hmm.
And so every week he's going to the bank and he's depositing some amount of money, and he's building up that muscle, he's building up that faith, he's building up that confidence, he's building up that mindset, what do you call it, emotional connection, saying, I got money in the bank, I'm building up my savings. This guy has always been able to have a fairly decent lifestyle, but most importantly, he's had peace of mind because he's got tons of money in the bank. He's built up that thing. And I think my whole point to the story is that one of the myths about saving money is that you have to have extra money to save. And I'm telling you, it's not true, because we all know that in cases when money is really tight and you're stressed out, people will take money. They will find money, and they'll go buy a six-pack, or they'll go to the movies, or they'll rent a DVD. They will spend money on entertainment to make themselves feel good.
Right.
Instead of just saying, you know what, I'm gonna put $3 in my savings account today. It is, like you said, it's a habit or it's a mindset that we need to break or alter or change. And it's not that hard to do once you start doing it.
Right. And you know, one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, a lot of our folks that we work with have money, they have investments, so it doesn't pertain to them as much. But one thing that they do and I started talking to people kind of about this, about urging, you know, for their children just to make sure that they focus on saving. And I think that, you know, if you really want to make a difference too, is and not let your child to kind of get into this rut and fall into this category of not having any savings and living in a financial anxiety, if you will, since, you know, 50% of the divorces in this country are caused by finances and living paycheck to paycheck and not knowing where your next buck or two is coming from for whatever emergency is going to come up. You start early, start with those kids when you start giving them a allowance. And I'm not saying by means that we're great parents and we're doing everything the right way, but, you know, you get your resources from books and different things. And simply, if you give your child any kind of allowance or savings, you know, have them start putting a little bit of money away so they understand the value of saving. Have them, like we notice one thing that works well at our house and that a lot of our other folks do that we know, is they have three jars that their children have. They get, let's just say they get a $10 allowance per week, month, whatever, however often it is. Of that $10, well, they need to put some into a giving jar. So maybe it's a dollar, 10%, so they'll put a dollar there. And then they need to pay, you know, kind of you're starting to train taxes and savings. So you need to put about 20% into a save jar. And then the rest can be more spend. So eventually, that after even 6 months of doing this, they'll have, you know, several dollars in their give jar. They'll have twice as much in their save jar and in their spend jar, or they're maybe depleted, but at least they can see how that money is getting put away and it's becoming a habit at a very young age. And then what will happen is hopefully it perpetuates into college and working and then becomes good savers into the future.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know what, and I'm glad you brought that up. We also do the same thing. We don't do the jars, but we do talk about paying a tithing. I think that when you pay tithing, when you pay a tithe or you give to a charity, I think it kind of helps you. It helps you feel, what do you call it? It helps you feel good, number one. But I think it also kind of breaks up the scarcity mindset, right, that there's not enough money, that you don't have enough money. And so by putting away 10% to a charity or to your church or your synagogue or whatever, you know, that tithe makes a big difference. And so we do the same thing with our kids. Hey, you know, X amount goes to tithing, X amount goes to your permanent savings account.
Right.
So when you want, you know, when you want that big whatever, and then, of course, the rest of the money you can spend how you want. And what's interesting, I tell you, with my older kids, I have a set of twins that are still at home and they're young and they haven't really nailed down the money thing. But with my older kids, they're all very good with their money. They, you know, you give them a buck, they hold on to it forever. But this started because with my oldest son, he wanted this $40 toy.
Okay.
And so I basically said, well, you know, that's a lot of money. You're going to have to earn it. And I can't remember how old he was. He's like 6 or 7 years old, maybe 8.
Yep.
And we set up a way for him to earn that money. And so he had to do some chores and the money wasn't coming fast enough. So he started looking at toys he could sell and he started doing some other stuff. And if you were to come to our house, he would grab you and say, hey, I want to show you my store. And of course, you know, you being polite, you would say, oh, a store, this is cute. Let me see what this guy's what this child's talking about. And then of course,
right,
he would show you all the stuff and then he'd ask you, what would you like to buy?
There you go.
You know, he was able to, twist some arms and people would politely buy some of the stuff that he had
there.
But
my point being,
it took a little salesman, but he understood a little bit of enough about business and left an impression on his mind. It took him, I believe, 3 months to earn those $40. It might have been 2 months. And he came to me and he's all excited. He says, Dad, I got the money. I got $40. I said, great. If you want, we'll go to the store this afternoon. And he says, no way. Are you kidding me? This took me forever to earn. I don't want that toy. And so my point being to this, not that, you know, we're so special or whatever or anything like that, but that our kids will not die if you hold them to a higher standard. They will learn things you weren't expecting them to learn. Like in my case here, I wasn't expecting them to have that that result or that lesson. And to this day, again, he's very good with his money. He saves. He does his tithing. And so back to what you were saying, it's a habit, it's a mindset, it's a standard. And the easiest, fastest way to, I think, for anybody to change their life, whether it's financially, you know, or as you mentioned, with losing weight, health-wise, or any other area of our life, is to change our standards, is to not accept that level of, of performance anymore. When we change that level of performance and we expect more, then we get more.
Right. Yep. And it's not the easiest path, but
it's
the one that actually works. And just like on your point, I bet when your son did buy something, just like when my 8-year-old daughter purchases something, it means a lot to her when she actually spends her own money to get it. It is a big deal, not just like a gift from, you know, grandmother that comes in that, you know, doesn't really have as much skin in the game, if you will, but they actually own it, they have it, they cherish it. It creates just a lot more value, and it makes them appreciate the value of money. And I remember we were at the grocery store just the other day, and we went to the grocery store. We normally go Sunday afternoons, grabbed all the groceries, went back to the house, we were unpacking the groceries, and she saw the receipt. Well, I've got two kids, my wife and I, and the receipt was, I think, like $138 or something. And she saw the receipt, and she immediately knew how much money that was. And she was like, oh, my goodness gracious, that is a ton of money. It would take me, you know, it would take me a year to, you know, she actually is starting to kind of put all that together, the value of money, what it means, and how, you know, you just got to be a good saver. You've got to do it because things, you know, are expensive to live. And I'm with you. I think, you know, as far as trying to fix this problem of a third of the nation, I don't think it's going to get any better because if you look at the worst generation that's out there with this percentage is actually between age 30, the generation Xers, as they call it, between 36 and 51 years old, more than a third have zero in savings. So it's not just the young 18-year-olds just getting out of college. It's actually our peers that may have no savings whatsoever, and you know that could be a big problem because if they don't go to work, they can't pay their bills. That's going to affect the economy, and it could kind of create a little bit of a steamroll effect. So I think you just got to really worry about them, but also worry with the kids and try to focus on those guys.
Let me ask you this. Based on your experience and the things that you've seen, are we now the worst generation? I shouldn't say we, but the generation, the Xers you just talked about, is that now become the worst generation of savers?
Well, I mean, if you just look at the statistics, yes. But I think you got to look at, okay, well, why that is and look deeper. And, you know, a lot of those folks still have student loans that they're worried with. They've got debts that they're worried with. Folks that, you know, the wealth that was generated in the 1980s and in the 1990s with the housing prices just going through the roof, a lot of these folks in this 36 to 51, they were buying their first home in maybe the year 2000 or 99, and they experienced a major crash in the housing market, and it got them even in more debt. But yes, if you look at just the Generation Xers, I would say yeah, they're the worst savers for sure.
You know, and what's interesting too, Wesley, is that I forgot where I read this, and I think it was talking specifically about millennials, that millennials will rent longer in their life, right? So they're going to be long-term renters, and that's also going to change the way things are because it's great. I mean, if you're a landlord, this is great news, but I think that, you know, if you're, if you're looking at, I think the value of a community, I think homeowners tend to be better community people because they're around longer. But so what this is saying is there's a huge shift coming as to the way we look at housing or renting versus buying. That's going to be also a big mind shift.
Yeah, and it's already happening. You've got more of the investor focusing on real estate and renting out property. And so then the folks that are living in there are basically just renting property. So you've got less probably homeowners, if you will, more of the investor side, but then the folks that are renting the properties, if it's not really your property as well, there's probably going to be a shift of, you know, how you treat that property, what you do to that property, and everything else. So, I agree with you. And you know, the good old days where it was always taught you buy a house and the house value is always going to go up and it's going to be a part of your net worth and it's going to be worth all this money down the road. Well, these generations here, millennials and even some of the Xers, are saying, well, that's not the case. Look what happened just a few years ago. Housing prices went down 50%. So why would I you know, throw my money at a mortgage, 30-year mortgage, pay all this interest to the bank when I don't think I'm going to make any money when I can rent.
Sure.
But I'll tell you that folks that own a home versus renting a home, in most cases, are going to probably treat the home that they actually own differently than the one that they're going to rent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it's just a different mindset. And maybe they are looking at the fact that, hey, I don't want to be tied down to a 30-year mortgage, or maybe I'm not confident in what's going to happen to the price of real estate. But either way, it's just different. And as you said, it's happening now. I want to ask you this. Right now, you know, the banks, I think, are doing their best to discourage savings. I mean, what kind of interest can you earn at a bank now? 2%?
Yeah. Well, I just had a gentleman come in that has a CD that's renewing. And he's making 1.35% on his IRA CD.
1.35.
He's excited about it because now the bank called him because he's got 10 days to renew it, and they say, we've got a great rate for you. It's going to be 0.75% for the next year. So that's kind of the world we're in right now. I think the best five-year bank CD that I've seen out there is maybe 2% at the highest. I don't know if it's bank's fault. Whose fault? The interest rates have just dropped like a rock, and we're still – the Fed funds rate is only 0.25%, not expected to go up anytime soon. So, you know, the banks say, hey, we can't – you know, we're not going to be able to take this money in, give you a decent interest payment to you, because we can't turn around and loan it out and get any kind of money off of that as well. So if we're doing 30-year mortgages paying 3.5%, there's no way we can give you 4% like it was back in 2007. So the interest rates are just very, very low. And the problem with that for savers and folks that have money at the bank is that now it's not even keeping up with the cost of living and inflation. So the value of that money that's sitting in the bank is actually depleting over time because just looking at compared to the cost of groceries and the expenses that we spend every month, healthcare are going up. And so a lot of the very conservative savers are getting frustrated because they're not making any money at the bank, but they know that their grocery bill is going up every month.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. That just blows me away. It's such a weird time when somebody's going to get excited about 1.75?
1.35, right.
1.35.
Yeah, if you really shop around, you may be able to get one for 1.75 for 5 years, right?
So was it 0.75?
That's the renewal. It's going to be 0.75.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. He was
making
1.35.
We're going to cut it in half.
Right. And he said his banker called him all excited. He says, hey, we can give you a good deal here. And he's like, you got to be kidding me. That's the world we're in. It is what it is.
You know, and so, again, this is one of those things where somebody may be saying, you know what, there's no point in me saving if I'm not going to get any interest on my money. What do you say to that?
Well, the fact of the matter is if you're talking to somebody who has zero in savings, you got to have something in there, even if it's making zero. Because think about, you know, a lot of people own cars. A lot of people have to go see the doctor. You're going to have an expense that arises that you don't expect. And when you have that expense that you don't expect, what are you going to do? You know, how's that conversation going to be with a friend or family to borrow money? Are you going to stick it on a credit card that's going to charge you 20-something percent? Are you going to go to a payday loan place that's going to charge you 50%? I wouldn't get too caught up on that emergency savings interest rate. You just got to at least start there to where that way you've got the money sitting in the bank to where you could pay that expense without having to resort to those other options. And then once you get your savings built up to where your emergency savings is covered, then you can start knocking out some debts if that's a problem. Then you start investing, which is more long-term investing to where, you know, over time you're going to, you know, obviously make a lot better rate of return.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, the lesson from our conversation, the takeaway from our conversation today, for you guys that are listening is no matter what your financial situation is, you need to save. If you're already saving, you probably need to save more. And then you look at, as you said, you start looking at investing that money. I'm not a big believer in taking savings to pay off debt, but I will take my savings to create a money-producing asset And then you can take the production of that asset to pay down debt. So
sure.
Therefore, you're not depleting the principal. And this is why you want to get to, you know, you want to find somebody who's a good financial advisor who can help you do this stuff, because it's not necessarily easy to navigate.
Right. And exactly. I mean, you can use leveraging to your advantage in a lot of cases, especially for business owners who figured out how to do it. For folks that buy rental property right now, they're doing it. I mean, they're able to take, you know, a down payment of, in my area at least, a down payment of, let's just say, $25,000. And even after they pay the mortgage note on the difference, they're making a return on that $25,000 investment. I'm not saying go buy a rental property, just as an example, and they're able to make a return on that $25,000 investment, if you just look at the numbers flowing in, almost 15 to 18% in some cases. That's a good use of leveraging. The bad use of leveraging is when you let the banks and credit cards and everything use you, and you know what kind of, you know the situation you're in when you're being used by those places.
Yes, yes. And I can't remember who said this. It might have been Einstein or Ben Franklin, but I remember somebody famous once said that interest is wonderful when it's working for you.
Right.
But it's a great slave when it's working for you, but a terrible taskmaster when it's working against you. Something along those lines.
Right, right. I got you. Some smart guy said something along the lines of don't let it use you.
Don't let it use you. Absolutely correct. And that's really the lesson here is it's, have you use it versus the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Wesley, we're out of time. It's been great having you on the show. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about simple strategies like savings and other things to help our financial lives go better. Wesley Wood, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Bert. Take care. Have a great one.
You bet. Good show today, guys. Great stuff there from Wesley Wood and Norm Blumenthal. Either way, don't be felony stupid. Don't be felony stupid with your business. Don't be felony stupid with your boat. Don't be felony stupid with your savings. Today's show could be called Don't Be Felony Stupid. Bottom line is, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.